When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, cause it's time for the podcast.
Welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life, another lockdown episode.
Another one,
yeah. I don't know if I need to keep
another
saying
one.
It. It's another one. I am here with Rue Madge, obviously. How are you?
I'm good. Good afternoon.
It's really nice to see you.
Enjoying the weather?
Yeah, well, it's
nice to be inside enjoying the weather.
It feels socially responsible to say you're enjoying the weather because you might encourage people, particularly I'm in Crawley and this fucking scum. I swear, they're fucking out every opportunity, mate. Absolutely.
Are you not there? Are you monitoring it then?
I've not become that dude, but like,
no.
It does piss me off. I didn't go to see my mum. I'm social distancing. I went to drop something off at my mum's house, and there's a fucking helicopter circling above, monitoring, because Crawley is so liable to groups of people getting together. Anyway, that's by the by. I want to introduce our guest straight away, because we are joined, we're delighted to be joined by Radio 1's Hip Hop DJ. I mean, that's not the title, is it? But it's Tiffany Calver. Hello, Tiffany.
Is that the best intro you've ever had?
Sound effects or something?
Oh, no, listen. In production, we'll drop the horns and all that shit. Now,
you know, there is on this system that we use to record, there is this as an option.
I will take that.
Is that the only sound?
There's this, but I'll save this for some of your jokes.
Ah.
Okay, that was a bit
I'd go with that one for my intro, because that one makes me sound like a joke. Imagine, Tiffany Calver!
Radio 1's Hip Hop DJ is probably the worst way you've been described, isn't it? But that is the deal, isn't it?
I mean, if we're not going off of YouTube comments, yeah, probably. I'm sure there's some worse ones somewhere.
How are you, Tiffany? You all right?
I'm all right, yeah. I'm still in my house, you know.
We're talking to you on Zoom as well, and I've got to say to you, your framing, your
perfect
shot,
it's
fucking great. It's
good extractor fan.
Oh, my God. Do you know what?
Some dead flowers.
Nice.
Going
on. Mm. and how are you finding lockdown? Are you struggling with it at all, or are you enjoying it?
Honestly, it depends. Some days I'm like going insane, and then other days I'm really loving it. Like, I'm starting to really enjoy just being like a human. I know that sounds really weird, but usually, I'd say with the past like 5-6 years of my life, it's just been like constant. So I have no choice but to like learn how to cook and like stuff now. So I've moved away from like tuna pasta, and you know, I can make like chicken. You know,
You've got quite a disgusting work ethic, haven't you? So have you found it tricky to sort of adjust to the fact that you can't be doing shit all the time now? I mean, have you found that easy to switch to?
Yeah, yes and no. The first couple of weeks, I was a bit like, what do I do? Like, I don't know what to do. Like, trying to find things to do, or like trying to think of like creative ways I could still work from home. And like, I don't know. I just don't know. I don't have an off switch in that sense. So I've kind of found an off switch like during this time, just because that's all you can do. And then, you know, I found time for all of the, you know, books I've bought off of Amazon to make my house look cool. Like, I can actually read them now, which is good. And yeah, just doing other things like listening to podcasts, listening to albums, listening to music again. Even like, that's the stuff I do to keep myself busy, but essentially it's still my job, like listening to music and, you know, building my crates. But it's like fun for me because I'm a nerd. So yeah, and watching other DJs on live streams been cool as well. But yeah, I'm just taking it easy, which I'm not used to. Like I told you, I woke up about an hour ago. Like that is mental.
Well, so you know it's 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Romish and I are both up at 6:30.
Okay, yeah. I don't have...
Not weird, like, together.
We are social distancing, but what happens is that Rupert wakes up and then he phones me and he says, are you up, babe? And I say, yeah, I'm up.
Are you working? Are you doing your radio show still?
Yep. Right at this table. No, that's been interesting too, because I'm probably the bane of my producers' lives, because like I just freestyle on Saturdays, so it's like I'm not necessarily like the most organized DJ ever, but I have to say I felt so much better. I bumped into Benji B in Paris, like must have been last year now. God, where does the time go? And I remember we shared an Uber to this party, and I just got to ask him loads of questions. So I was like, so do you like prep your sets, or like do you like organize your crates? And he was like, no, do you? And I was like, no. So happy. And I was like, what do you call your playlist names on your Serato or your record box? And he's just like, I don't know, like brr. And I was like, me too. And I just felt so much better. But yeah, I don't necessarily prepare, and as we all know, rap is maybe the most unorganized genre, so everything kind of just comes out as and when. And I'm a bit of a annoying person in the sense of if something comes out, I want to be the first to play it. So I will be sending my producer stuff 2 hours before a show, being like, we need to clean this. I have to play it tonight.
Yeah.
And, so I'm loving life because I can't do that to them. So it's like, I have to prepare the show throughout the week and then sit under a duvet, well, two duvets with a mic, and I can't breathe. So it's really fun. I think my producer wants to make like a bloopers of like all of the in-between parts of links, because I'll just be like, what did I say the other day? I was like, and this next one is, and then I was like, no, that sounded weird. And this next one is, fuck my life. Fuck my life. Like, that's what I was doing. She's like, this is no jokes. So we have to put it out somewhere.
I've been having to record like VO and stuff for TV shows, and I put myself under a blanket, and I just, they go, it's really good, Ron, but can you just not move, because it's just rustling. It's really good. It's really good vocal quality. We can actually hear your duvet. So do you mind sort of just sorting that out?
that's definitely goose. It's a good duvet. Sure.
So how long have you been doing? How long have you been at Radio 1 now for?
Just over a year now. I started January 5th, 2019.
And have you accepted that that's what you, I mean, is it, does it still feel mad to you that you're doing it, or have you managed to get rid of the imposter syndrome now and you're totally locked in?
I think I'll always have imposter syndrome. Like I'll always have a bit of imposter syndrome, but I think everyone does. So I don't know how to explain it. It's like, you know, when you like have a goal and then you get it and you're like, okay. I don't know. I'm quite hard on myself. I don't really like doing things until I feel like I've earned it. And because I feel like I'm still such a baby, I did feel in the beginning like, shit, like I need to prove myself here. And yeah, that's kind of gone. Like, I definitely think I found my feet, and I'm just enjoying it. I'm learning to just enjoy the show. Like, I love radio. It's something I wanted to do, so I'm not gonna constantly be like, oh, I shouldn't be here. I'm just trying to make it my own. I think a year on, I've kind of done that a bit. I'm still figuring it out, but you know, I think people have finally established Fire in the Booth is not there anymore, which is
I think Fire in the Booth is like having to do Mop the Week after Frankie Boyle left. Do you know what I mean? Because every single time we do it, where the fuck Frankie?
Legit. I remember like when people be like, oh, so Oh, you're a DJ. What show do you have? And I'd be like, oh, I'm on radio, which also is so weird to do, to be like, Radio 1. Like, you know, it's just a bit of a flex.
Yeah.
Great when you're flirting, though. Like, great when you're flirting. But, like, I'd just be like, yeah, I'm on Radio 1. They'd be like, oh, like Tim Westwood. And I'd be like, no. Oh, like Charlie Sloth. No, like me. Oh, cool. So you're doing Fire in the Booth? And I'm like, no, that's gone. That has gone. Like, you know, but it's cool now. People know my freestyles now. So they'll be like, oh, the Fredo freestyle. They'll be like, oh, this, oh, you're, or they'll hear my name, but they don't know my face. So I'll be talking for ages. And then they're like, I know your voice. And I'm like, no, no, no. Like, I just feel weird doing the whole, this is what I do, because it's quite official now. Whereas, like, when I was on an online radio station, I didn't mind. I'd be like, yeah, I got this cool little online radio show. But now when it's like, yeah, I'm the big dog, you know, I don't really like flexing. So they'll be like, oh, and I'll be like, yeah, you should look at this freestyle. It's like Tiffany Calver freestyle friend. And they're like, you're Tiffany Calver? And I'm like, yeah.
Do you say exactly like that? Yeah.
Yeah.
And then laugh after.
Yeah. Yeah, always followed by an awkward laugh.
Have you found that as it's gone on during the year, you've been like changing up what you do, or have you tried to like try things that you think, oh, fuck that, I'm not doing that anymore? And like, do you feel like you've been evolving as it's gone?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And it's also about kind of getting to know your team as well, because I think everyone has different visions. Essentially, it's supposed to be, you know, my vision, but you work with your team. So it's a constant, like, us kind of bumping heads and like figuring out what works. And, you know, they've got more experience in radio. I don't, but I know like music, or, you know, we kind of all help each other. So we've trialed a few different things, but I always have ideas, and I always like just doing something new. I love doing like more interactive stuff with an audience, because for the first time ever, I have an audience, which is cool, which was weird in the beginning to like realize. And then it's like you get like 1,000 text messages, and it's like, oh, people are listening to me. I need to stop faffing around.
Do you know what I get so nervous about is whenever I go to do like, come to BBC to do like be a guest or get interviewed on the radio show, and then they go, I'll text in. I always get nervous that I'm getting called a cunt on every text. And then like, I start like getting really paranoid and watching to see if they're tilting the screens away from me, because everybody's going, I'll get this fucking prick off the show or whatever.
Oh,
I get so that, you know, oh, the lots of people coming in, Romesh, wanted to say something like, oh god.
Are you ready? No, with my show, I get a lot of people in jail, and I can't shout them out, and it's quite, I can't be like, yo, bang your door. Like, Westwood used to do that, but unfortunately, that's not how it works anymore. So there's a lot of people that like put it in code, and I find it so interesting trying to like figure out like, is this, can I say this one? I'm not sure. Like, you know, a few have slipped, and then I've had the prank texters.
Yeah.
Which my producers are supposed to like scan all of them before I say them. But you know, some are so good they slip through the grass, I guess. And one time, what did I say on radio? I said something like, I was like, big up Ginger Mikey and all the boys working hard at Come Insider. And then I was like, burst out laughing on radio, like, oh my god, like. But they felt it so well that you couldn't tell.
You just got to give credit where credit's due in that case, haven't you? Do you know what I mean? They've used some creative imagination. Fair play.
Yeah.
So you are 24, right?
I'm 25 now.
25. Okay.
I'd love to still be 24, but I'm 25.
Yeah. Well, listen. You're talking to two old men, so. It's,
yeah.
But the thing I wanted to ask is, like, because we obviously on this podcast, it's probably fair to say that we cater to an older audience than you do on your show. There's no debate about that. I mean, we definitely do. But the thing that we have, like, for example, the other night, I started doing a hip hop quiz on Instagram with Yoda, right? And so we were doing this thing where we're playing it, he was playing a tune backwards and people had to identify it. And then like I started getting comments like, oh, I didn't realise you had to be over 40 to enter this quiz and shit like that, right? So then we did another one where I picked another set of tunes, like more like modern stuff, and put it on. And then loads of people were going, you're playing all fucking new shit. Like, this is all crap. I want to like, hear proper stuff. Do you know what I mean? And so you just sort of, it's suddenly, not suddenly, I think from doing this podcast, you sort of realise you can't actually please everyone. Do you know what I mean? You're always going to be sort of, you're always going to be displeasing a certain section of the hip hop fraternity, community or whatever.
100%. I remember I did a Boiler Room once and it was like a festival stage where it's like, I can't just play Mobb Deep. Like, I can't. Like, do you know what I mean? I can't. It's a crowd. It's literally a massive field of 16-year-olds that want to hear Travis Scott, like, Let Me Live. And then all you get on the comment section is like, oh, hip hop is dead. Or like, is it hip hop? Why did they call it hip hop? And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. cry myself to sleep.
I take it you have to be, but are you naturally quite open-minded to all the different styles and all the new stuff that's coming out? Or is there stuff that you've had to, as a result of your job, you've had to sort of go, well, let me give this a chance, or let me listen to it in a more open-minded way than I otherwise might have done?
So I guess that's something I'm learning with time. I would say I'm picky. I think that's something that has kind of put a large difference in between like the show now and what the show was. It's a Saturday night show, but it is literally just stuff I like. And I think that's quite important, really. Like when you live in a world now where you can just make a playlist of songs you like there has to be something that makes people want to hear my opinion on stuff. So I try and remember that. And, you know, like I'll be playing like my show on Saturday is literally like, it's like West Side Guns album. And then it will be like Playboi Carti, or it will be, you know, like I try and like do everything, but I do have to like it. Mm. And I am obviously super open to stuff. And I have trained myself to be more open to other stuff or to understand it from an audience's perspective or who's listening, because at the end of the day, like it's a compromise when you're broadcasting. But I have to like it. I can't play something I don't like, even if everyone else loves it. If I don't like it, I won't be able to live with myself. So I just don't.
Do you not have like on other, do Radio 1 still do that where they have like selected playlists or whatever of stuff you have to play, but your show is exempt? You don't. That's good.
Hell no. There's no way. No, I don't have that. No. I guess same with like Benji or Kenny All-Star, or I think Snoochie Shy as well. Like a few of us with like specialist shows, which means we don't have to follow a specific playlist.
Is it quite, because I know, I don't know what, I can't even imagine the pressure you're under in that regard, because I don't want to try and freak you out now. But what I mean is, like, we've done things where we've recommended albums on the podcast, and if people don't like the album that I've suggested, I basically have to stay off Twitter for a bit. Do you know what I mean? Like, so
yeah.
Do you? Because I guess if you're trying to play stuff first, if you want to get to these records before anyone else does, what that means is, you're relying so much on your own instincts as to whether that you should play that record or not, right? You're not sitting on it waiting to see what the general consensus is and then go, okay, cool, I'm going to jump on this. You're going, I want to be the first or one of the first to play this. So that's a shit ton of, I mean, you've got to have a lot of trust in your own taste, right?
I definitely have trust in my own taste, but what I've tried to do is look at it as almost like an open conversation. So it's like, I might play, sometimes I play songs that I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I'll play it, then I'll stop it and I'll be like, sorry, let me just play that again. And then I'll start it again and be like, right. And then I'll like mix. So it's like, I do a bit of everything. I just like having an open conversation. If I co-sign something, so far it's been right. So
yeah, right.
But even if it's not, if someone hates it, it's interesting to hear their perspective. It's interesting to see how other people react, because at the end of the day, I'm originally a DJ, so it's like it's almost like a, I don't know, like a testing ground for me, where it's like, do people want to hear this? this? No, they don't. Okay. So it's a bit of everything, but for the most part, you've just, like, I don't read YouTube comments or comments in general anymore.
No, that's not, that's not, I mean, that is, Jesus Christ. I mean, you should never, ever, ever do that.
No.
Oh my God. I remember, I've been interviewed by, like, journos in the past that don't have that attitude towards YouTube comments. So, like, they sort of take them as rational. So I remember, like, getting interviewed by some guy and he's going, you're quite a divisive figure, aren't you? Because I sort of looked at one of your videos and the YouTube comments were all, you know, some of them liked you, but a lot of them were sort of saying how much they hated you and blah, blah. I was like, yeah, that's YouTube, mate. I mean, like, you can't fucking judge me for what some fucking nutcase said in his basement. Like, what the fuck are you doing, man?
Yeah, in the beginning, that stuff used to really get to me. And I even considered, like, not doing my job anymore just because I was like, yeah, I'm, like, not this person. Like, when I was DJing for, like, 50 quid in a basement in Dalston where there's, like, a hole and water dripping next to the CDJs, nobody hated me. Like, oh, her, yeah, she's sick. Like, everyone loved me. And I was taking 3 night buses home and, like, someone was smoking crack next to me on the bus and I'm like, sorry, I'm really uncomfortable. Do you know what I mean? Like, everyone loved me. Like, it was fine. And then you reach a certain position or point where you're exposed to a whole new pool of haters. So that was interesting in the beginning. And then, you know, I look at it now, what I've told myself is it's like, there are people out there that, you know, I don't know, they might like eat mushrooms with like Nutella. You just don't know. I wouldn't like them.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So if they don't like me, it doesn't matter. Or, you know, there are people that probably voted for people I wouldn't have voted for and they're probably pricks. Or, you know, there are people that, you know, BNP, like, I wouldn't like them. They probably wouldn't like. So you've just got to remember that the world is full of twats, basically, and you can't impress them all. And that helped me.
It's very difficult. I totally agree with you, by the way. And I think that, you have to, I think your profession is similar to comedy in terms of, there's something about comedy where if you try and make people laugh, you're trying to do comedy, they don't like it. They want you and your family dead. And it's just a weird, like, angry reaction that people have. And to be able to just go, well, I'm going to distance myself from that. It's hard to do though. And I know, like, you feel kind of, you've been quite involved in mental health issues and stuff like that. Cause that's all tied up with that. I mean, the fact that you were talking about potentially not doing it or thinking about not doing your job anymore as a result of it, that's huge, isn't it? I mean, like, is that part of the reason why you become so involved in mental health issues?
I've always been quite open, I think, in like a really lame way when I was younger and I was going through a really tough time. I didn't really understand myself and like what was happening to me and all this stuff. I always promised myself I would be the person I wished I had when I was, you know, first having anxiety or panic attacks, or when I had depression for the first time and like not feeling like there was anyone that was like me that I could talk to. And that's actually kind of the reason I went into music, like, because I didn't have anyone else. So I was just listening to music, really.
Mm.
So it all kind of comes together. And the more you get into music, and I think just like, the more I meet people, the more you realise how much people just want to talk and they feel like they can't. And I've always tried to be that person. And then I was just like, yeah, I wanna continue to be a person that, you know, kind of is an advocate for something that I believe should be normal. Like, it's a normal thing. And especially in our world, like, in the hip hop scene and the rap scene, I know how difficult it is for artists at any level to open up or to talk about things. So I just want to make people feel like they can talk. And I've definitely been that person. I think there are so many issues. I want to make documentaries about it. There's a bunch of stuff I want to do, but yeah, I'm a big advocate for just talking about things, because I think people will always try and, like, with anything, like, people will always try and, like, just make it something bigger than it is. And it's like, I don't know. I'm definitely one of those people where, and I know I am, where it's like, if you come up to me and you're like, you're all right? And I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm kind of having a bit of a panic attack right now. But do you know what I mean? When usually people just be like, yeah, I'm all right. Mm. But I'll be like, yep. Yeah, I'm feeling quite anxious, actually. And blah, 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 like, I'm that oversharer. So
would you do that in any context? Like, if somebody just sort of was walking past and said that, you would?
Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah. I'm the worst at small talk.
We were out on our government authorised walk the other day with me and the kids and my wife, and we bumped into, like, just some, not bumped into, fucking hell, that's not government approved, but we saw a guy across the other side of the road, and he, like, nodded to say hello, and then we just sort of ended up in a chat about the lockdown and blah blah blah. And then as we walked away, my oldest son just went, that is one of the most boring conversations I've ever seen you have. Because you do have those bullshit conversations. Well, you know, I guess we don't know when it's going to end, do we? No, you know, it's just all, you know, well, we plough on, don't we? Just all that shit. Awful. Absolutely rank.
That is why you need to put them.
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So what was your route into hip-hop? How did you become so passionate about it? How did that become your thing?
I think it's just always been a part of my life. That's the thing, like, it was never I'm gonna do this and be this. Like, I just have always, like, from birth been, like, listening to hip-hop.
Did your family, was it played in the house when you were growing up and stuff then?
Oh, all the time. All my baby videos, yeah. I might actually make playlists out of the music that's in the background. My parents are sick. Like, there's some SWV, Wu-Tang Clan. I was a massive Busta Rhymes fan. Apparently, the first thing I ever said was "Wooha," and I'd always say it, like, constantly. Like, that was the first thing I said, not "Dad" or, like, "What now?" It was "Wooha." You know, like, I was honestly just raised as like Tupac, Biggie, everything. And then, you know, my parents were quite young when they had me, so they were still like, you know, they like to party. So they'd always be bringing that in. And my dad was more into, like, because he produced, like, he just in his spare time, he, like, makes apps and stuff, but he's constantly... The way I play a PS4 is, like, him on Ableton. So he was, like, constantly, you know, making, like, mixes, and, like, our coffee table were turntables when I was a baby, but he was, like, a proper... Like, he was more Dilla, Pete Rock.
Right,
you know, that kind of vibe. Which is so funny, because, like, now I absolutely get to kind of shit on him a bit, where I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to America. I'm going to Jazzy Jeff's house. And he's like, what? And I'm like, yeah, just stay for a week. And he's like, with who? And I was like, Robert Glasper, you know, Redman's there. Yeah, I get to do all of that. And Pete Rock was there. He absolutely died over that one. Young Guru. And he's just like, you're just living my life. You're living my dream. And I'm like, I know. But no, I've constantly been into music. My mum used to say to me that when I was a baby if she'd give me to my nan or to like someone to babysit me and she was going out, she had to make sure she packed this VHS tape that she'd made of just like Janet Jackson record. I don't think I've ever heard this. of Janet Jackson recordings, because I would be in nightmare. Like I would cry and just throw a tantrum, and if you put on Janet Jackson tape, it's like a compilation tape of like her concerts and music videos and everything, I'd just be quiet. I'd just be there
like you have a sort of comfort blanket.
Yeah, Janet Jackson was my blankie.
Yeah.
Tiffany, if you write a book, that is the title.
Yeah.
Janet Jackson was my blankie.
She could get a quote off her as well. Yeah. Did you know from a young age then that you wanted to DJ, like being surrounded by music? Did you have aspirations? No.
No, because I think my dad kind of put the fear of God into me when it came to DJing. Like, he's a proper, you know, the people you talk about that probably listen to your show, and if you play new stuff, they're like, oh, what is this? Like, that's that. So, you know, if I wasn't going to be like DJ Premier, like cutting and doing all this stuff, don't do it. So I was like, all right. So I didn't want to do that at all. Didn't want to touch a turntable. So I was like, I will embarrass and shame my father. I thought I wanted to be a journalist because I was always really good at English, like at school, like I was the top student. So I was like, oh yeah, I can write. I can write about music. I could interview people. I love talking. I don't know if you can tell. And yeah, so I was like, maybe that's what I do. So that's kind of how I started. I made a blog that was in at the time. And I just kind of did that for a bit while I was still in Telford with sheep. So that's kind of how it started for me. And then I didn't really get into DJing until I was kind of forced into it, actually. Like, I was honestly shit scared of touching CDJs or like vinyls or anything. And I started getting really bad anxiety. It was like this period of time where it's like you either decide to go to uni or you don't. And my dad was always like, oh my God, like stop blogging and like get a job and like all this stuff. And I was like, oh, you don't get it. And like, it was that period of time. And I decided to take a gap year, and I was still writing for what is now Hypebeast Music, was Hype Track. And I was doing all the reviews and just doing all that stuff, and something just wasn't right. And a friend of mine was a DJ, and she was like, just download like the software, and anytime you feel anxious, just like, just make mixes, like blend stuff together. And I've always been that person where at a party, in an Uber, you know, on Facebook, when they tag you in those stupid things where it's like, best hair, best music. None of that. I used to make my school disco playlists on GarageBand when I was in school. Like, I've always been the go-to. So even when my friends would be DJing, they'd be looking at me like, what do I play next? And all of this stuff. But it wasn't until I started making mixes myself, like just out of like panic. I was like, oh, I actually quite enjoy this. And I wanted to be on radio. I didn't necessarily know I'd DJ as well.
What was the first gig that you got then for DJing?
I made it myself. So yeah, it's difficult. I think it's quite cliquey, the DJ scene. And you know, I'd been going to the parties and I knew some of the DJs and stuff, but no one's gonna take you seriously. Like, no, if you're just like, yeah, I'm like DJing now, like for the most part, no one's gonna take you seriously. And I wanted people to book me, so it wasn't happening. So I was like, cool, I'm just gonna throw my own party. This is like, you know, when you're young and you have like 300 people in your phone before you grow up and
rip. Yeah, I know it well. Yeah,
you know. So I just threw a party, and I'd made it like a fiver to get in. And there was a producer called Sango. There is a producer called Sango, and it was his I was quite in with the Soulection people, because I was like, I kind of was like their street team in London for a bit. So I did his first show, and I did that, and that was where I DJed first. And then I just carried on doing my own parties, and then eventually, because my parties were cool, other people would book me because I was cool. So I'd play, and everyone. I just loved people's faces when I play, because I think there's always that weird perception of like, oh, she's just been booked because she's a girl, or like, oh, she's just been, which unfortunately just comes with being a girl. And I would literally go in like pajamas or a tracksuit and be like, don't look at me. And then I just DJ, like my main thing was like making people be like, who the fuck is that? So that's how it started. And
what were those parties called? Were they a name?
There were these parties I used to go to where I was just like a fan for a really long time. And then, for example, there's a party, I'm sure you know, Living Proof. Mm. You heard of Living Proof?
Yeah.
There's Snips.
And I'm nodding, but we're not sure.
No, Snips did Snips actually was when I did the shows in New York, he did warm up for me. And then we went to see a proper New York hip hop party. Khalil was playing. It was Lower East Side, yeah. And it was amazing. But I did feel, I'll be honest with you, I did feel like I looked like an Uber driver that had turned up. I was I was looking around, I was thinking, I don't look like I should be in there. But apart from that, it's great.
I don't think anyone feels like they belong at a Lower East Side club, to be honest, if you're not from that scene. But no, so you'll understand this. So if you know Snips, like I was thinking about this yesterday, I was like, when people are like, what are some of your biggest achievements? Or like, you know, a lot of the time people will be like, yeah, like when Drake kind of co-signed you and did this. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. But when Snips co-signed me, that changed my life. Like, yeah. I was like, if Snips respects you enough, it's like, because you've seen his tweets, like, don't want to be on that side, the bad side. So
yeah.
He actually came up to me. I once did the first time I DJed a Living Proof, these girls called Work It, they asked me to do their sound clash. So I was up against like four other teams, and everyone else had like flags and like all of this stuff, like horns, and they were doing the most. They'd make t-shirts. I just got back from Birmingham. Like I was in a cab, like in pajamas, like rocked up. Nobody is on stage with me, and I won. So... And I just remember him coming over to me and being like, do you know what? In the beginning, I was like, oh, this is just another like young person kind of jumping on this whole thing. But like, respect, wow. You know your shit. And I was like, yes!
If you want to know how much of a big deal that is, if you're listening, just look at Snips's Twitter, because you'll know that he does not, I mean, he doesn't fuck about with his opinions, does he?
Love Snips.
So do you think your dad and your having so much hip hop in your life growing up, do you reckon that's the reason why you've got an equal kind of appreciation for the older stuff and the new stuff? Because to be honest with you, most of the guests we've had, if I'm being honest, I think would be balanced in favour of like, we've had more people say, I'm not as keen on this new shit. And it's not what it used to be, than we have had from the other point of view. And you feel like somebody that, definitely has a foot in both camps. It's like you're across all the new stuff, but also one of the first group you mentioned were Mobb Deep when you came into this interview. So do you think, is that unusual for you to, and do you think that we should give a shit about people having an appreciation for older hip hop? Does it matter?
I think it does. I think if you actually are serious about something, you should educate yourself. One, have an appreciation too. And again, be open-minded, like that there's old stuff that actually, no, I love all the old stuff, if I'm honest, but like there are things I don't like, there are things in the new camps that I honestly don't understand, and I'll have my 17-year-old cousin be like, oh my god, you've got to play this guy called 467HR, and I'm like, no, and then I feel old for the first time. But yeah, no, I feel like if you're in a position like mine, like 100%, you can't call yourself like the host of the rap show if you don't listen to rap and all the different layers that come into that, or at least have a deeper knowledge and appreciation for it. And I'd say I'm quite lucky in the sense that I didn't just listen to hip hop growing up. I think people that purely just say like, oh, I just listened to one genre, is like the lamest thing I've ever heard, really. So I think in some ways I can understand, because I grew up in the era where there was MySpace and all of this stuff happening, and Two Dope Boys and datpiff.com and Gangsta Grills and Lil Wayne making mixtapes every day. And like, you know, the blog era and Rap Radar and all of this stuff. So I grew up with what my parents gave me, and then that was kind of my own thing, which they didn't understand. So when like the Kid Cudis would come out and they'd be making songs with like a band called MGMT, and it's like, you know, I can understand like how there is a Playboi Carti now, or how there is a Lil Uzi Vert, because they come from, you know, they're my age mates, and that's what we listen to, and we heard Lil Wayne doing rock albums and experimenting. So, and you know, with time everything shifts and everything changes, otherwise it's gonna die. Like the one thing I think that's amazing about hip-hop, and why it's probably like the most, you know, diverse genre, there are so many like sub-genres under this one massive umbrella, like there is actually something for everyone. Which I think is amazing. Like I personally don't, I'm sure, like tell me if I'm wrong, but like I don't feel that way about like country or indie folk music. I think you can always kind of, you know, you listen to it and you're like, yeah, I get it. Whereas like with hip hop, it's like, even Griselda having an incredible like moment right now.
Lil Brody let off his 30, he ain't even flinch. Caught the body, dipped to the A, nobody seen him since. 560 bins and I ain't need the tents. My weakest scent cost more than your mama need for rent. That's just for one zip, the drum rip, leave you rinse. Hide the body for a week and it's gonna leave a stench. Rappers come to my city, they gon' need consent. Cause we already know you pussy, nigga, we convinced. I told Virgil.
The young kids are kind of appreciating it a bit. Yeah. Like the older camps of hip hop heads, which I'm sure you guys can tell me if I'm wrong, but but it's nice to see that lyricism and like that still is alive in a sea of like, what the fuck is going on to a lot of people.
And do you think like, because you know, we've had people on that have like said things like it's not about skill in the same way that it used to be, or you know, it's not about the craft in the same way that it used to be. Is that bullshit, or is that, I mean, what's your take on it?
I think it totally depends again on what you class as that. It's what you class as skill and lyricism and the specific kinds of beat choice that they go for, you know. If you love Alchemist and like even Budgie, like he's more new and all of that stuff, there is that lane. Or if you classify skill as Lil Uzi Vert making a Backstreet Boys sample and making his own rendition of it and flipping it, and you know, there are so many different lanes now that I think sometimes maybe it's difficult to wrap your head around all of them. It just depends. And then obviously in the UK now, I think we've had this incredible surge of talent and music. And I'm actually really excited about the UK because there is skill. Like there is skill in the lyricism. Like not necessarily the algorithm-y, still panny, like rap music that's coming out that could be like a theme tune for a cartoon, but like the actual rappers, like there are some incredible people coming out. There's a guy called Millions from Birmingham, and like the way he raps, his cadences, his flows, like yeah, sure, that the beat might be more current than like, if I put him in a booth and I put like Who Shot Ya like instrumental, he'll smash it. Like I had a guy called Parsaloo. He went over a Tupac beat and like I was so impressed, and he's not your classically trained ear of, he didn't grow up listening to that stuff. He's from Gambia, like he listens to nothing. He does not even know what that stuff is. Like, do you know what I mean? And the way he makes music is incredible.
Bad man, run up in your bando. Knick knack, match that work like Rambo. With that white, I feel like Django. Shut down, lock off, now they man them know. Real bad man, who you talking to? He got soaked by that dark black hue. She, me, I'm that big bad wolf. How many bad knows did I run to? Gambian brother, Mr. K Kunte.
There are so many different pockets of talent and like discovering, you know, it's not, people aren't like doing rap battles anymore, and then it's not like What was that Eminem film? 8 Mile. Like, it's not like, it's like, but it is still amazing to see, like, there's a guy called Meeks Manny from Manchester, and like the way he raps is incredible. And then there are some drill artists. Obviously, like, there are some artists that suck, and then there are some that aren't amazing, like, but we live in this world now where we're exposed to so much music all the time. Wow, it's the bane of my life. Like, there's just so much music to hear, and people can just upload something. So it does dilute the, I guess, the watering hole of talent a little bit. But when you find it, it's amazing. And
there's fewer gatekeepers, right? Because you can just put stuff out there. So,
oh yeah, 100%.
It means there's more of it, but the quality control is not quite there.
It's an interesting time as well, I think, for radio, where you know, especially with young people, which is what keeps radio alive, and like everyone just wants like the young listeners and stuff. But I personally feel like it's about having a relationship with an audience that want to come back and listen to you. Like, people can make their own playlists, people can make their own radio shows, people can do any of that stuff. They don't need to tune in and listen to you on a Saturday night, 9 to 11 p.m. Radio 101. You know,
well done.
You have to make them want to listen to you.
Hmm. You know, what is your audience? Like, is there like a specific age range, or is it quite stretched out? Or
mine is quite stretched. I would say it's more young than, I'm kind of in the middle. It's not like super young. What has shifted, I do know, is since my show, where it was very male heavy listenership, now relatively equal, like a lot more women listen, and I think that's really sick. Yeah.
That feels like, I mean, there's a time when that, if somebody had said to you, there was a rap show on Radio 1 where the gender split was almost 50-50, you'd go, fuck on. It's never ever, never ever gonna happen.
Never. But I think what's really sick, and for the most part, I hate being asked, like, what's it like being a woman in a male-dominated industry and all of that shite?
That was my next question.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, do you know what? Can I tell you something? Rupert's so desperate, and I said to him, do not fucking ask that question. He kept up to the point you came, and he goes, I really want to ask. I said, Rupert, just please. It's actually offensive.
I sent an email about it and everything.
It's actually offensive how desperate you are to ask this question.
Well, I've opened up to it now, but no. Yeah. It's a question that always gets asked, and it's like, fucking, it's the same as any woman feels in fucking anything. Like, what do you want me to say? Really, like, oh, it's so tough. Of course it's tough. Like, whatever. I've had a tunnel vision on what I wanted to do, and I got there, and my gender clearly didn't matter. Like, it's cool. Like, and that's it. Like,
does that answer your fucking question, Rupert?
Does it answer your question?
Not quite.
I'll go into it more. You know what?
We'll do a follow-up podcast.
We'll talk about it, and then I'm never going to talk about it again. But what I've seen in the past year that has changed for me, one, like, obviously when you grow and you get a bit bigger, your crowds are a bit bigger. And I remember looking up in January at my headline gig, and I like looked up, and the diversity now of my crowd, I was like, wow, like, I didn't even expect it. Like, so many women, like, in the mosh pit with, like, so many men. There are, like, gay couples, like, straight couples. Couples are coming to a rap gig together. Do you know what I mean? They're mates. There are, like, older people. There are super young people. Everyone's just having a nice time. And I think that is something I'm really proud of when it comes to my position, because I think, and from conversations, because I went in the crowd after and I was like raving with everyone and dancing and having a chat, and people had traveled from like all over the UK. Someone had flown from Atlanta, like, it was crazy. And what was nice was the women would all be like, you make me feel like it's okay for me to listen to this stuff. Or they'd be like, yeah, I don't know. And it's such a nice feeling, because I think, and again, another thing that I fucking hate when I'm talking about rap or I'm doing interviews is like the whole like misogyny thing. But how do you define that? Like, how can somebody tell a woman like no, you shouldn't listen to that. It's disrespectful. But you can't really dictate what offends a woman and what doesn't. It's like, yeah, there are definitely some stuff. There's definitely stuff that, like, I've listened to it and I'm like, yeah, this is cool. And then they'll say something absolutely wild and I'm like, okay, well, I'm gonna say that then. Like, but for the most part, that's my choice. So, you know, I hate when people are like, oh, as a woman, how can you, like, listen to Juicy J? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Have you heard Pimp C? Like, and you think Juicy J's bad? Like, you have no idea. What?
Can I just, I just want to distance myself from the questions that we're wanting to ask. Sorry. Tiffany, we're almost out of time. This has been amazing. Thank you so much. Rupert, would you say best guest ever?
Best guest ever, hands down.
Have you got an album that you can recommend that you're listening to at the moment or somebody that we should check out?
I would recommend West Side Gun's album, Pray for Paris.
Left out that fair shell, did the impossible, incomparable. 100 drumsticks and silences came optional. Shit sound unstoppable, they ducking and dodging. Topless Corvette parked in front of the Majid. Earn my respect, talk sick. When I whipped it, ain't locked it. Still look gorgeous face in the stock. Yeah, yo, the Mary Comic Collector. The guy who's on the Hebrews, Panetta. The Mona Lisa on the off-white sweater. You too broke.
That is amazing. And I think everyone will enjoy it. Jay Electronica's album, which is basically Watch the Throne 2 with Jay-Z. I think that's amazing. For now I think that's it. There's something coming in May that I think everyone will like, but I can't really say.
Oh,
too much. Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I recommend.
Well, Tiffany, thank you so much for coming on, man. We really appreciate your time and good luck surviving the lockdown.
Thank you.
And once again, I'm so sorry about Rupert.
I'm sorry,
please. Yeah. But thank you so much, man.
No worries.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.